Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Is Joe Biden truly running in 2024? Is it really time to tear down the Constitution and completely start over? Well, it's a Deep Dive Thursday, and we are going to get into it right here on Critical Thinking. So Andrew Coppens has decided that he's going to be sitting out for the rest of the week. So you get me, Pat Oney, for today and tomorrow as well. So I will be filling in for him for the rest of the week, riding solo. Please support me over at The Pat Oney Show on all the social media channels. You can also follow Andrew over at The Coppens Show as well. He's just recovering from his knee surgery and just wasn't quite up to getting back in the saddle in terms of, well, hosting a daily show. So here I am. We're going to get into some things with from the State of the Union last night, or at least not the State of the Union itself, but what some comments are in terms of the what it means for the 2024 election cycle. We're also going to get into this question that Andrew sent me earlier this week from someone that he found on Twitter, and is it time to tear down the Constitution and completely start over? And I'm going to go through that in the second half here of the show of if we were to actually tear down the Constitution, what would that look like if we were to rebuild? How much of the initial Constitution would we keep right now? So I'm going to do my best to explore that in here in just a little bit. Of course, we will also do, since Andrew is not here today, I will also do a featured story from the Babylon Bee. And so we'll get into that here in just a little bit as well. But here I am. You have me for the rest of the week. Please follow us on all the social media channels. Again, I'm at the Pat Oney Show. He's at the Coppens Show. You can tweet at us, send us DMs, things like that. If you have questions, comments, if you have some thoughts about the show that you would like to share, we would be more than happy to, share them on the podcast, as they are applicable, to the things that we discuss. In any case, I want to get into the 2024 election cycle and kind of pull from the State of the Union that happened, two nights ago now. And I saw yesterday on social media from Buck Sexton. It was actually over on Facebook. He said, last night should be a wake-up call. Biden is running, and he will be formidable because of the Dem machine propping him up. The GOP better get its shit together, or else Biden will win. And no matter what, 2024 is going to be a very close election. There are things about this statement that I agree with. There are things that I disagree with. First of all, I don't know that Joe Biden is going to be the presidential nominee in 2024. It doesn't seem to be in the cards, despite Joe Biden might be thinking it is. I'm not sure. However, I could make the case for Joe Biden in 2024. I really can. Why? Well, is Kamala Harris really likable? If you were to remove Joe Biden from office right now, are you really getting a better deal? Now, Andrew and I would at least say from a mental health capacity standpoint that is true, but she's going to be just as, if not more so, incompetent than Joe Biden is. And that's saying something from someone that is supposedly mentally sound. And then you have other potential candidates, like I've heard Gavin Newsom's name thrown around a few times. With all the stuff that has happened with him in the last few years and with COVID, I'm not sure that he would be the smart candidate to run. No, I'm not saying that he will never run for president. I'm not saying that they will not try to prop him up at some point to become president of the United States. I think 2024 is too soon. That being said, I think he could run maybe in the 2028 cycle. And the reason why I say that is because then you've put some distance between him and the COVID years, and voters tend to have a very short-term memory, and apparently that's especially true in California. Case in point, Nancy Pelosi, Dianne Feinstein. So I agree in the sense of, yes, Biden could run in 2024, and if he does run, will he be formidable? Yes, because of his handlers, because of the Dem prop machine that is holding him up, really, literally speaking. I don't see this. I mean, if you watch the State of the Union, then I mean, he came out almost immediately with a gaffe, and he said some very incoherent things within that State of the Union speech. And especially when it came to, I remember watching a clip on China. It's on my Twitter page, by the way. It was pretty incoherent. It didn't make any sense whatsoever. I don't know that voters are going to put up, especially independent voters, are going to put up with another term of Joe Biden. I don't see it happening. And considering his approval rating right now, this is from 538, is at 42.9%, and 538 is more left-leaning than not. So realistically, he's probably 3 to 5 points lower than that in reality. So I don't see that being something that he could overcome. Now, could this completely change in the next year or two? Right before the 2024 election cycle? Yes. I would argue yes. In the sense of, if Donald Trump becomes the nominee in 2024, are we going to see similar results that we saw in the 2020 election? And by that, I mean, are we going to see hate voting? Because that the 2020 election, despite it being stolen, and to preface this again, because we've had to talk about this before, yes, the election was stolen. It's just not stolen in the way that most people think it was stolen in. It was stolen many months before the election, with states being allowed to change their election laws and doing the mail-in voting, not mail-out voting, and just all the issues that have gone on with those kinds of things, and being able to truly have trust in these election cycles, and especially in certain key states. So are you going to have the same thing play out in 2024? Well, in terms of electioneering and stuff like that, potentially. I don't think it's going to matter who runs there in terms of that. I think that will be something that will be attempted again. However, people voted for Joe Biden because they simply hated Donald Trump that much. It wasn't because they liked Joe Biden. I mean, for Pete's sakes, 538 has him at a 42.9% approval rating right now. So you can't tell me that Joe Biden is a popular president. He is not. He is not. So, on the other hand, though, who do the Democrats have currently that could run outside of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris? I don't think Gavin Newsom is a better choice. I don't. Now, it all comes down to, especially with elections, how do you market a candidate? Could they market someone like a Gavin Newsom in such a way that he would gain popularity? Maybe, but I don't see it happening. I think it's still too close to the COVID years, especially since we are just really coming out of the pandemic. I don't see that being a thing. The GOP better get its shit together or else Biden will win. That I actually do agree with. I do believe the GOP needs to get its crap together. What we have seen in recent weeks to recent years is that the GOP just really screwing over the American people, making all sorts of promises and then not delivering on them. And then until you have the whole speaker race debacle with Kevin McCarthy and people like Chip Roy holding him accountable and holding out votes for him, to get him to make some concessions was brilliant. However, I don't trust people like Kevin McCarthy. I could see him very easily doing something within a few months that is going to be very contrary to the promises that were made that put him in there as speaker. So, the GOP needs to have more of a united front, because the one thing I can honestly say about Democrats, at least generally speaking, is that they have a fairly unified front. They are able to coalesce around a candidate. That's what they did in 2020. I mean, Bernie Sanders was really leading the charge in those primaries until people started dropping out and started coalescing around Joe Biden. It's not that they didn't want the policies of Bernie Sanders. It's just that Bernie Sanders would often say the quiet part out loud in terms of what the Democratic Party really wants. So they're able to coalesce around people to, fool voters, especially independent voters, and to coming out and voting for Joe, which is ultimately, I think, partially what happened. Was it the winning result? No, but it did happen to a point. Anyway, so the GOP needs to coalesce. They need to actually represent the principles and values that they claim to represent. Otherwise, they really aren't any better than the other party. They aren't. So they do need to get their crap together. They need to find candidates that they can coalesce around. If I'm the GOP, you don't go back to Donald Trump, by the way. You just don't. Yes, is Donald Trump going to be a contender in the primaries? Absolutely, he's going to. He has a fairly large base still. He is a power player. However, if you want to coalesce and bring forth a better candidate that is Donald Trump-like in terms of policy, but just isn't a jerk, especially on Twitter, you might go for someone like a Ron DeSantis. That would be the smart thing to do. Now, Ron DeSantis hasn't entered the race yet. And as I said on yesterday's show, the first primary is still about a year away. Like, Ron DeSantis does not have to announce right now. And there is always the possibility he just doesn't get into the race. There is that possibility. I don't think that that's true. I think he definitely will run. But maybe you start coalescing around someone like a Ron DeSantis, because that way you're appeasing the MAGA forever crowd in terms of policy, but then you're also appeasing the more independent crowd and the more of the middle of the road type of crowd, with Ron DeSantis just not being a jerk like Donald Trump. And with all these classified document scandals and stuff going on, it just may not be a smart move for them in the long run. Because if they can actually prove that, hey, he was holding on to classified documents that he did not declassify before leaving office, then that's a problem. That's going to be a problem. So, and he should be held accountable for those things if it's true. Okay. Not because people want it to be true, if it's actually true. So I don't know. And plus, going back to Joe Biden for just a second, you've got the whole classified document scandal going on with him. The question is going to be, is how much are people going to care? How much are they going to care about the classified document scandal? How much are they going to care about all the crap that Hunter Biden has been involved in? That is the question that remains to be seen. And if I go back to the 2022 election, people are upset with the current guard, right? That's what the polls said. However, generally speaking, they voted in all the same people. So if the lesson should be learned from the 2022 election, that if you are going to win 2024, you have to coalesce. You have to unite. You also have to put up candidates, by the way, that people like and feel like they can at least trust, or at least attempt to trust. Because guys like Mehmet Oz, Blake Masters, people clearly don't trust them. They would much rather have the old guard or the current guard, because it's the devil they know versus the devil they don't. And I can speak from experience as someone that has been a member of the GOP, even though I don't necessarily vote GOP anymore. I have been disappointed time and time again. I have major trust issues, even with the GOP. So you have to put up candidates that people can trust, that people are going to like. Ron DeSantis, considering how handedly he won Florida in the 2022 midterms, is someone that people are going to like. It's someone, he's going to have a national market. He is probably currently the only one that could truly challenge Donald Trump in a primary election. Who wins out of the two? I don't know. But it's kind of like what the Joker said in The Dark Knight. You break the stick, throw it down in the middle of the room, and it's like, we're going to have tryouts. That's what we need to let Ron DeSantis and Donald Trump do. Provided when Ron DeSantis actually enters into the 2024 presidential race. And then Buck said at the very end of this, and no matter what, 2024 is going to be a very close election. That depends on what happens between now and the 2024 election. Is there a major? Are we able to prove that there was a major scandal with the Joe Biden administration and Joe Biden having classified documents? Is there anything else that comes out about Hunter Biden? Is there anything else that comes out that ties this administration to China in any way, or to Russia for that matter? Is there anything that comes out? Because unless there's something major, yes, it in theory could be close. Could be. Especially with the Dem machine and the media, by the way. I don't think you can forget about the media here. The media will prop Joe Biden up as much as they humanly possibly can, regardless of who the GOP nominee is. They will do that. They will prop him up. They will gaslight. They will promote. And there will be many people out there that will fall for it, that will not critically think through what they're being told and do the investigative research themselves and ultimately fall for it again. That will happen. But that it really depends on, can the Dem machine continue to prop up Joe Biden, which I'm not sure they can. Especially as we continue to see the mental decline. And what is the media going to do? Now, if they can successfully do this, yes, Joe Biden will be the nominee again. And it could, in theory, be a close election. But it all depends on what happens. It really also comes down to what happens with Joe Biden himself at the end of the day. It could be a landslide victory for the GOP, though, depending on what happens as well. But we all kind of thought that going into the 2022 election, and boy, how wrong were we. It was a very sobering and very clarifying moment when it came to that particular election cycle. But we will see what happens when it comes to Joe Biden running again. And if the Dem machine decides that they can't prop him up, Kamala is probably your nominee. And if Kamala is the nominee, then yeah, I could see it being a landslide victory for the GOP. Again, I kind of thought that if Joe Biden became the nominee, that whoever was running for, well, if Donald Trump was running for re-election, that you know, he would win that by a landslide. And I was wrong on that too. So it really kind of depends on what happens. It really does. I don't trust polls. I think polls right now are way too early. The only poll that I semi trust right now is Joe Biden's approval rating. I don't think that he is the popular president that some people on the left or the Never Trump movement would like to make him out to be. He's not. He's not popular. So it really just kind of comes down to, despite that approval rating, can they prop him up? And is it politically expedient for them to do so? Because I've always said they will dump Joe Biden as soon as that becomes politically expedient. So far, it hasn't, for one reason or another. So time will tell who's right and who's wrong on this. But I just don't see. I don't see Joe Biden at the end of the day. I don't even know if he'll finish out the year here. I don't know. So it's all going to come down to politics, though. With his mental health decline, I didn't know that he would make it through his first year, but now we're going into his third year here, and he's still president. So I guess we'll find out. We'll find out, and time will tell who was right. All right, so let's get into the Babylon Bee featured article for today. And since Andrew is out, I still get his winnings for the entire year at this point. Since he's missing a third consecutive day tomorrow, I will be getting all of his winnings for next month as well. You know, since I'm having to do all this extra legwork and fill in for him, it is my compensation. So any of Dominic Izzo's money that we win, I get. So that will be a thing. So today's headline, 12 rich people tell us their number one investment. 12 rich people tell us their number one investment. Oh boy. Investing your money is tough when your savings account can't even keep up with inflation. How are you supposed to avoid abject poverty? Fear no more, lower to middle class folks. Drawing on wisdom from 12 wealthy investors, we uncovered strategies to help everyday people protect their wealth in times of uncertainty and inflation. Try out the solid inflation-proof investments recommended by the 1%. 1. Nancy Pelosi, insider trading in Congress. 2. Bill Gates, all the farmland. He owns it all now. It's probably nothing to worry about. 3. Vladimir Zelensky, World War III. 4. Mark Zuckerberg, the hope that everyone on Earth wants to strap a VR headset on their faces all day. 5. Elon Musk, babies, children are our future. 6. Madonna, babies, their stem cells keep looking young and attractive. 7. Joe Biden, world's largest collection of original art by Hunter Biden. 8. Jeff Bezos, an underground volcano lair. Smaug, I am fire. I am death. Tom Cruise, aircraft carrier full of fighter jets. 11. Richard Branson, more failed business ventures. And then 12. Donald Trump, donations to his re-election campaign. It'll be the greatest comeback in human history. And then a note from the Babylon Bee, which is not satire. With Joe Biden in office, digital currencies are on the risk of sky inflation and growing global tensions. The U.S. dollar could plunge into decline. Now is the time to protect your money. Investing in precious metals such as gold and silver may be an ideal solution. These are safe haven assets, are not only durable and predictable investments, but also offer long-term protection from market volatility. Precious metals have been used for centuries to store value and maintain wealth. Now is the time to make sure that your portfolio is diversified by incorporating them in your retirement strategy. Don't become another victim of bad economic policy and decisions. Take control back over your own financial future. Look, folks, I read this not because I was asked to or anything like that. Because they actually do have a link here to look into investing into precious metals. I'm not necessarily advertising their sponsor here or anything like that. I mention this because we've talked about this a little bit over the last couple of weeks in terms of the dollar and what's going on with global currency, the World Economic Forum, all those things that are happening. It's a really smart move to start thinking about your investment portfolio, what you can do to better diversify yourself and to protect you and your family's future. I'm doing the same thing right now. I'm doing my homework. I'm doing my research and figuring out the best moves for me and my family. So I highly recommend this. You don't want to fall victim to further inflation and bad economic policy and what could end up at some point in time being something that is like a Great Depression, only probably bigger than what we saw back in the 1920s, 30s, and early 40s. So something to consider and just be prepared is all I'm saying. Think about that. Think about your future and just be prepared and get prepared today if you're not. All right. Before I move on, I also want to mention our sponsor, Coffee Brand Coffee. If you haven't gone to Coffee Brand Coffee yet, please do so. It helps support us. It helps support another great business as well. they don't care about your politics. They don't care if you like Joe Biden or not. They don't care if you are the AOC type or if you like Ron DeSantis. They don't care. They do not care. All they want is your money. They want your money. They want your business. And in return, they give you a quality product because everything that they do is freshly roasted, individually packaged, and shipped directly to your door. They've got all sorts of great different flavors over there. And if coffee is not your thing, you can, however, get tea or hot chocolate. I've done the hot chocolate because I don't drink coffee myself. So that is something, if you're into that kind of thing, I highly recommend it. It is a really, really good product. And they're actually right out of Farmington, Utah. So for me, they are actually, it's a local owned company that can ship to you anywhere in the United States. So go to coffeebrandcoffee.com. Whatever you purchase to your heart's content, you can get 5% off your purchase by using the promo code CRITICALTHINKING at checkout. Go to coffeebrandcoffee.com. The promo code is Critical Thinking, and you will get 5% off your purchase at checkout. All right. So I want to get into this question that Andrew had sent me earlier this week. And it actually came from Rebecca Jones on Twitter. It says, "Radical, you say. Try no. The U.S. is the only country in the world still using a constitution written in the 1700s. Only 8 others have constitutions written before 1900. France completely rewrote theirs in 1958, Greece in 1975, Spain in 1978, and Poland in 1997. Okay, good for them. So the question here is, do we need to tear down our constitution and start over? And what I thought I would do to ultimately answer this question is if I were to tear it down and rebuild it, what would that look like and how much of it would I keep? I think the further question here is it better to not tear it down and just amend the Constitution? Because when's the last time that we had a constitutional amendment? When is also the last time we had a constitutional convention of states? Try never. Maybe it's time that we do those things rather than completely just tear down our constitution and rather amend the constitution as it stands. That might be the better option. But just for hypothetical sake, I thought I would go through each article and just briefly. I'm not going to go through like every little thing, but just briefly on each, touch on each article, and then any constitutional amendments that we might want to change or add to our current constitution. Now, I'm going to preface this by saying I am not claiming to be right with any of these ideas when it comes to this. This is something that if we were to ever redo or amend our constitution, that we should have extensive conversations about. This is just one man's opinion, okay? I'm not claiming to be right on any of this, but let's just get into it. Okay, so Article 1, Section 1. This is all about the powers of Congress, okay? All legislative powers herein are granted to invested in a Congress of the United States, which shall consist of a Senate and House of Representatives. Okay, so in principle, I do agree with this. I think it's good to have a voice of the people and a voice of the state. However, when we put in the 17th Amendment, which gave popular vote to senators, what was the point of having a separation of the populace and the state representation? Because that was ultimately the point of a bicameral legislature, is that the House in this case would represent the people, and then the Senate would represent the state. Then you'd have two senators from every state. Well, now the senators can win a popular vote rather than how they were elected before or appointed before. So what is the point of having that? So if you're going to have a Senate and a House of Representatives, there needs to be a separation of power there in terms of not necessarily just how they function, but how they are also selected. So that is something that I would actually change about Section 1, is that I would actually define how they're selected within that section as well. I actually do believe it actually in the Constitution. It does talk about those things later, which is fine too. But if we're going to maintain two houses in Congress, what's the point if both are just by a popular vote? That's all I'm getting at there. Section 2. The House of Representatives shall be composed of members chosen by every second year of people of the several states, and electors of each state shall have the qualifications requisite for electors of the most numerous branch of state legislature. Okay, I wouldn't really change anything here. That makes perfect sense. It's one of those things, like when it comes to representatives, the whole point of having elections, especially every 2 years, especially, is if they're doing something wrong, we the people want to be able to change them out, and change them out often. So especially if they do something nefarious, they deceive their electors, and then they start doing things that they weren't elected to do. You know, you want to have the ability to change them out and change them out often. Now, there is more to Section 2, but that's all I'm going to touch on, just frankly for the sake of time. Section 3. The Senate of the United States will be composed of two senators from each state, chosen by the legislature thereof for 6 years, and each senator shall have one vote. That's where I would take it, especially, again, this is what I was talking about. If you're going to have two houses of Congress, Senate and the House of Representatives, the Senate should be chosen by the state legislature. Let's go back to that. Let's have that separation. Because, honestly, if you call your senator today, they don't really help you in the way that you think they do. Your state rep is the one that is supposed to be your voice. The Senate, not so much. They're supposed to be the voice of the state. That's it. Section 4, and again, there's a lot more to Section 3, but I'm just touching on these very generally. Okay, so Section 4. The times, places, and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof. But Congress may at any time, by law, make or alter such regulations, except as to the place of choosing senators. So what this means is, when is your election day? How do you do elections in your state? Okay. There are some states that do this a little differently than others. We have states that do primaries. We have states that do caucuses. We have odd states like Virginia that do their elections every odd year. And then their state legislature is made up a little bit differently than a lot of others. So there are very different states within the United States of how they do this. So that is all that section 4 is saying. Okay. I wouldn't change that at all. I think that's perfectly fine. Section 5, each house shall be the judge of elections, returns, qualifications, of its own members, and a majority of each shall constitute a quorum to do business. But a smaller number may adjourn from day to day and may be authorized to compel attendance of absent members in such a manner and under such penalties as each house may provide. Okay, so this is basically kind of going back to where they verify elections. They are determining like qualifications of its own members, and so like they are putting in people into certain spots within that respective house committees, things like that. They are able to vote on these things and make those decisions. In other words, each house may determine the rules and proceedings, punish members and disorderly behavior, and concurrence of 2/3 and expel a member. They can do all that stuff too. That's fine. Like all of this seems fine to me in terms of how each house, the Senate and the House of Representatives, want to function, how they make their own rules, in terms of how they function within those parameters. That's fine. Section 6. The senators and representatives shall receive compensation for their services to be ascertained by law and paid out of the Treasury of the United States. They shall, in all cases except treason, felony, and breach of peace, be privileged from arrest during the attendance at the session of their respective houses and ongoing or ingoing and returning from the same. And for any speech or debate in either house, they shall not be questioned in any other place. Okay. I have one issue with this, and I think a lot of people are going to agree with this simple idea, is that, okay, they can have their compensation. I'm fine with, I had to really think about this one, because if you're going into an elected office, you're still doing a job, you still have to be able to provide for a family, you still have to put food on the table, have a roof over your head. And if you're going back and forth between your respective state and DC, you know, I get it. Like things get expensive, and they should have some kind of compensation. However, I would like to see some kind of clause in here where if there is not a balanced budget, something happens to their compensation, whether that is a proportion of their compensation taken out, because there isn't budget for it, or they lose it altogether. I actually could make the argument either way. There needs to be something there, because what's going on? We're seeing people get into Congress that weren't wealthy really to begin with. They might have been okay, but they weren't wealthy to begin with. But then they're retiring millionaires. So how is that possible? And a lot of that comes back to insider trading and stuff all that like that too, but I digress. I think there needs to be something here, though, that is punitive. If they can't have a balanced budget, they need to have a balanced budget in there to be able to have fair compensation. Section 7, all bills for raising revenue shall originate in the House of Representatives. The Senate may propose or concur with amendments as on other bills. I'm okay with this. I've always the House has always had power of the purse. However, they don't use that power as much as they probably should. Realistically, the only restriction I think here is, you know, they can't spend more than what they have. You can have power of the purse, but you have to have a balanced budget, and you can't spend more money than what you have, because that's part of the reason why we have the national debt issue right now. It's part of the reason why we continue to see the national debt ceiling being raised, and why we have inflation problems, and all that sort of fun stuff. Like there needs to be, I think, just some things there that, okay, yeah, you can have power of the purse, but you also can't spend more money than what you have. I think that would be reasonable. Section 8, the Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises, to pay debts, and provide the common defense and general welfare of the United States, but all duties, imposts, and excises shall be uniform throughout the United States. So in other words, to borrow money on credit of the United States, to regulate commerce with foreign nations among several states and with Indian tribes, to establish uniform rule, naturalization, and uniform laws subject to bankruptcies throughout the United States, to coin money, regulate and value thereof in foreign coin, and fix standard of weights and measures, to provide for the punishment of counterfeiting and securities of current coin in the United States, to establish post office and post roads, and there's lots more stuff here in Section 8. But a lot of that, what I just got into, some of it, I would say, I mean, especially when you're dealing with foreign countries, and trade and commerce, things like that, if we're going to give Congress the power of the purse, this makes sense. There also needs to be, you can't spend more than what you have. You could also make an argument here, like, oh, you also have to bring in a certain profit margin too. Because, you know, we are here to also make money if we're going to be trading with foreign entities and things like that. There must be a added benefit there. Let's see. Section 9. And I know there's a lot more I could get into in Section 8. There's a ton more. But I could spend a whole show on that. And maybe we'll get into more of that in detail another time. But Section 9. The migration or importation of such persons or any states now existing shall think proper to admit shall not be prohibited by Congress prior to the year of 1808, but a tax or duty may be imposed on such importation not exceeding $10 for each person. The privilege of writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended unless when in cases of rebellion or invasion, the public safety may require it. No bill attainder or ex post facto law shall be passed. Capitation or other direct tax law shall be laid, unless proportion of the census and enumeration herein before directed or to be taken. No tax duty shall be laid on the articles exported from any state. And there's lots more here. It has, again, if we're giving the House the power of the purse, a lot of this does make sense. So I don't necessarily have a problem here. Section 10. No state may shall enter into a treaty, alliance, or confederation, grant letters of marque and reprisal, coin money, emit bills or credit, make anything but gold and silver, coin, or a tender in payment of debts, pass any bill or of attainder or ex post facto law. Basically, all this is saying is states can't create their own money. We all are using the same currency under these United States. Okay, fine. That's fine. And the only time I could see is like if a state decides they want to secede from the union, then they can create their own currency if they wish. But I'm fine. That's fine. All right. So Article 2, this is all executive powers. So most of these, for the sake of time here, most of these are going to be fine. However, there hasn't been a separation between the executive and the legislative for some time, especially when it comes to things like war, for example. You know, the president must ask Congress for a declaration of war. And so there needs to be that separation of powers. There's way too much power within the executive. If we were going to tear down the Constitution and start again, we would want to greatly limit the power of the executive compared to what it is now. Because I think that's where a lot of the abuse of power is ultimately coming into. President being commander in chief is fine. You know, Section 3, Congress information of the State of the Union and recommend their consideration, such as measures of judges, things like that. All that's fine. I think that's all a really good balance. Again, I think all in all, Article 2 has a pretty good balance to it. It just, we have to get back to actually following that versus what we've been doing for the last several decades in terms of presidential power. And then Article 3 is all about the judiciary. Again, all this is pretty, you know, I would stick to this. So I don't think I would change anything when it comes to that. Article 4, full faith and credit shall be given to each state of public acts, records, judicial proceedings of each state, and Congress may, by general prescribed in manner which such acts, records, and proceedings shall be proved, and effects thereof. Fine. The citizens of each state shall be entitled to the privileges of immunities and citizens of several states. Fine, I guess, too. There's just a lot here, frankly. New states may be admitted into Congress, into the Union, which is also fine. Like if they're going through the proper channels, if we're going to annex a state into the Union. So that is something that, you know, just follow the proper way that we've done it before and fine, you know. And then the last section of this one, the United States shall guarantee every state in the Union a Republican form of government, and shall protect each of them against invasion. So basically protecting each and individual state from foreign and domestic violence. Okay, great. Article 5, the Congress, whenever 2/3 of the House majority shall deem necessary, shall propose amendments to the Constitution. Okay, this is simple. It's 2/3 majority. I wouldn't change that either. I think if you were going to change the Constitution at all, you have to have 2/3 majority. And this can come through a convention of states as well. And you have to have 2/3. I think that makes perfect sense. Article 6, all debts and contracted and engagements entered into before the adoption of the Constitution shall be as valid against the United States under the Constitution as under the Confederation. So this isn't necessarily, I think, that up because we haven't had the Confederation for a long time. So this might not necessarily be applicable anymore, but there is more to it here. So this Constitution and laws, the United States of the pursuance thereof, and all other treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States shall be supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state should be bound thereby. So, okay, so it's just saying essentially that whatever the laws of the United States, which are, you know, are of the that are coming down from like the Supreme Court and how the laws of the United States that are specified within the Constitution will be law of the land. So, and then lastly, Article 7, the ratification of Convention of 9 states shall be sufficient for the establishment for this Constitution between the states of ratifying the same. The word of being interlined between the 8 lines of the first page, the word 30 being partly written and an erasure of the 15th line of the first page of the words is tried being interlined between 32nd and 33rd lines of the page of the word of the being interlined. Wow, that's a lot of words. Interlined between the 40. Okay. So, in other words, it's basically saying the Constitution can be ratified by 9 states. And that was applicable to the time, I believe, that this was written. So, because that would have given them, I believe, 2/3 majority. So, getting into the amendments here really quick. The only one that I know of that I would change right now is the 17th Amendment, and that is the election of senators and how they're elected. I would put that back on the state legislatures. That way you actually have a representation of state and a representation of the people within Congress as it was originally designed. I honestly would do that. If we were going to tear this down and redo some things, though, I think with the First Amendment, with some of the things that we've seen in recent years, I would want further protections for religious liberty. In other words, I should be able to pray in public, at least just by myself, quietly, and not be ostracized for it. We've seen cases like that happen. We've seen things like the Colorado baker, where it's bake the cake bigot, and not wanting to participate in a gay wedding. And not have his business being part of that. I think we could elaborate on some more of those things within the First Amendment and add those layers of protections. I think it's the same thing can come down to speech. I think speech flat out is just protected. It is protected. It's something that shouldn't be used against you in terms of anything short of acts of violence. Shouldn't be used against someone, at least in terms of employment, unless there are certain kinds of employment. Maybe, I mean, there's arguments to be made here. There are certain things that we could have out with speech, but I think there are issues with speech where we could have that conversation of, is it absolute or not? The right to bear arms. If anything, the only thing I would change here is just to update the language to be more modern. But other words, shall not be infringed, period. Point blank, amen. That's it. And then I'm just going to kind of skip around here. I mean, the rest of the Bill of Rights, I think, are pretty solid. Let's see. Income tax. I think we get rid of that altogether. That's just no. No income tax. Hashtag taxation is theft. The 22nd Amendment, where it's 2-term limits on the presidency. While I'm okay with this, I'm okay with having term limits on the presidency. What I'm saying is, let's put in an amendment that puts term limits on members of Congress as well. That should be in there. And then, with congressional compensation, which being the 27th Amendment, I would go back to this. You have to have a balanced budget. There must be a balanced budget clause or even amendment in of itself, in its own right, that must be there. And that should have an impact on how Congress is compensated. They can't spend more money than what they have. They can't. They must have a balanced budget. They must be able to regulate our money correctly. So not just spend ourselves into oblivion and not even make cuts from time to time, because there's going to be things that are going to become unnecessary over time. So I want to go back to my original question here of, is it time to tear down the Constitution and rebuild? My answer is ultimately, after going through everything and seeing how well the founders laid out the Constitution, is ultimately no. No, it is not. If anything, I could make the case of maybe it's time to make amendments. Maybe we could make some amendments here, but I would want to see that happen through a convention of states, not through Congress. Because I can't trust our politicians to get this right. I can't do it. So I would much rather see this come through a convention of states. Which, by the way, we've been heading down that road of convention of states for many years now, and it's getting closer and closer all the time. So hopefully more states will continue to join that conversation and be a part of that so that we could actually have these honest, real debates about our Constitution and what should or shouldn't be in there at this point. I'm open to the conversation of, hey, let's make some amendments, let's make some adjustments for modern times, but it also cannot be something that is only beneficial to one party and not to another. So, in other words, let's just take the Second Amendment, for example. If you don't like guns, don't own guns. That's fine. I support your right to do that. But just don't tell someone else that they can't. And then those that violate those rights and they commit crimes like murder and terrorism and things like that, then they're stripped of those rights. But you can't hold good law abiding citizens accountable for things that they didn't do. So that's all I'm saying there. So it's ultimately my answer is no, we don't need to tear it down. But we may need to have a conversation about amending the Constitution. I also think it would be worth having a conversation of, do we need to expand representation within Congress? Now, why would we want to add more politicians to Congress? I'm not saying we should. I'm not saying I'm even a fan of the idea. I have a very healthy distrust of all things politicians at this point. There are politicians I like, but I do not completely trust them. Though, why would I continue to send more people to D.C.? Maybe for the sake of representation here at home in each individual state. That is what the argument I would make for it. But I also can see the argument against it. So that could also be a conversation worth having as well. Because I think a lot of it comes down to is a lot of people just don't feel represented anymore. They don't. And so maybe it's time to have conversations like that to make people feel more represented within Congress. Within the DC circuit, if you will. So anyway. All right, well, tomorrow is going to be a best, worst take of the week. We'll begin to play the beer, not the beer. We'll crown a new Richard of the week. And then we will also throw the worst into the fryer and stuff like that as well. And so, it'll be me tomorrow. Andrew is out for the rest of the week as he's recovering from knee surgery. But until tomorrow, don't get lost. Remember who you are. And no means no.
Witness history at Roland Garros, where old rivalries meet new talent on the clay battleground. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled access as the world's top players in tennis face off to see if the veterans maintain their dominance or if a fresh face rises to challenge them. Daily live coverage of the French Open begins Monday, May 20th. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.